You can just leave it there. I wonder if somebody asked you the question, who are you? What would you say? If somebody asked you, who are you? How would you respond? Maybe you would respond with this. Maybe not with just this large of a sticker, but hi, my name is Will. And you might be known by your first name. Yeah, thank you, hello. You might be known by your last name. I'm a part of that family clan. When somebody asks you the question, who are you, how do you respond? Or maybe you talk about your family. I have my parents, my grandparents, my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids. For me, I have a crazy family. We put the fun in dysfunctional. I have four parents, a mom, a dad, a stepmom, a stepdad. I've got a sister, I've got a stepsister, I've got nieces and nephews, some which are two-legged, some which are four-legged. And I have a crazy family. When somebody asks you the question, who are you? Maybe you respond with your family. Or maybe when somebody asks you, who are you? You respond with what you do in the profession. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a banker. I work in corporate America. I'm a teacher. I'm retired. I'm a mom. Maybe you talk about your vocation of what you do. For me, I'm a pastor. Or maybe when you ask, who are you, you go to your characteristics. I'm kind, I'm funny, I'm gentle, I'm social, I'm extroverted, I'm introverted. Maybe you say your characteristics. For me, I am a creative person that wants to help people. When somebody asks you the question, who are you, how do you respond? Where we find ourselves in the text today is in the book of Philippians, where Paul is writing to the church of Philippi, and they have followed Jesus and followed the disciples to a T, because Paul has kind of been following them along their path, and the apostles have been following them along. And Paul is going to ask the church in Philippi, when I leave you, who are you, and how do you grow into yourself without me? This is what he writes. If you want to follow along, it's chapter 2, and we're going to read two verses. Verses 12 and 13. This is from the Common English Bible. So Paul writes this. Therefore, my loved ones, just as you always obey me, not just when I'm present, but now even more when I am away, carry out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Carry out your own salvation with fear and trembling. God is the one who enables you both to want and to actually live out good purposes. Let us pray. God, speak to us today through the author Paul and guide us to figure out who we are, the good parts of us, the bad parts of us, the ugly parts of us that we don't want to look at. Know that you love all of us completely. Amen. So when Paul is writing to the church in Philippi, he writes this verse about carrying out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, when you hear this, you might think to yourself, well, why? Why? I can't work out my own salvation. But if you read earlier on in the first chapter, we know that Paul is writing about God who does everything for us and that we can't earn our own salvation. We can't earn our way to God. We can't, whatever we do, we can't make it ourselves. It is only by the grace of God that we can do this, that we can live in salvation. But then he writes, and he says, you're called to carry out your own salvation. You are a respondent of that love that God has given you. And the church in Philippi knows this. They followed this to a T. So the question becomes, what do they do next? How do they live out that salvation? So this word carry is really interesting because every translation has a different word. So this is from the CEB, carry out your own salvation. Or if you go to the New Revised Standard Version, they have the term work out your own salvation. But I think my favorite translation is the Message Version, which is a paraphrase of it. And it says this, be energetic in your life of salvation. The Greek word we have is the actual same word that we have from the word energy. So he's saying, be energetic in your life of salvation. Now, what does that look like? How do we grow in our faith and work out our own salvation with fear and trembling? I think one of the greatest ways is to figure out who we are as people, how we are created, and who we are, and growing in our self-awareness. Because if we remember all the way back to Genesis, this is the creation. So this is when God creates humankind. It says, what? God creates us in what? In God's image. God creates us in God's image. So some authors would say that when God creates us in the creation, we have a fingerprint of God upon us. And we can see parts of God when we look deep within ourselves. In all of ourselves, we have that fingerprint of God. So one of the ways that we can live in this salvation, to work out our salvation, to carry out our salvation, is to figure out who are we as people. So one of the ways we can do this is to look through this window. We're going to go through an Enneagram study, or an Enneagram about a personality type. But the way to know yourself is through this window. It's called the Johari window. Now, the naming of this is funny, because the two guys that made it was Joe and Harry. And they got the name from it, Johari window. So, and this window is all about how you see yourself as your whole self. You imagine this is your entire self, and it's a window, four different window panes. And where you find yourself at first is here. This is a section of yourself that you know about yourself and what other people know about yourself, what you choose to show to them. This is the open part of the window. And this is always open. You can see almost all of this. But in order to go deeper and to know all four quadrants, you have to go to each four of them. So we go to the second one, and this is the blind category. And this is the stuff that you don't know about yourself, but other people know about yourself, and they can give you that feedback. And sometimes that's really hard, because you don't want to see that dirty stuff, and you think you're perfect, yet all of us know that one person that thinks they're the best thing in the world, yet they always do the same thing over and over and over again that makes us upset. They are blind to this section of themselves. So we can grow in this area. But then we also have this area, where things that you know about yourself, but you choose not to share it with other people. Only with a select group of people know this about you, and you know all of this. This is the hidden area. And then you have the unconscious area. And this is the hardest one to figure out about yourself. These are things you don't know about yourself, and that your friends and your family don't know about yourself, but sometimes the Spirit figures these things out about you, and the unconscious stuff that you do becomes subconscious, and the subconscious becomes conscious. And this whole theory is about how to figure out who you are as a person. All of yourself, the things that you see, the things that your friends see, the things that your family sees, the things that you can't even see. This is your whole self of how to work out your own salvation. And one of the best ways to figure all of this out is through the Enneagram. It's not angiogram, it's not a sonogram, it is an Enneagram. And if you want me to spell it, it's E-N-N-E-A-gram, all right? And the way this theory works, it originally started as a Christian practice. An ancient Christian named Evagrius created this. And it was an oral tradition. There was no writings about it. It was just to figure out how we are as people, both the good and the bad, and trying to figure out how do we learn more about ourselves. And it wasn't until the 70s that people began to write books about this Enneagram. Now, a lot of you, who's taken the Myers-Briggs test? All right, almost everybody. Who's taken the DISC assessment? Who's taking the Strength Finders? Strength Finders 2.0? Strength Finders 3.0? Yeah, there are a lot of tests to figure out who you are as a person. And a lot of them pull out these strengths, and you live into the strengths, and that's awesome. But the beauty of this Enneagram and the beauty of this personality typing is that it shows all of you. It shows the great parts, the gifts that you have, but it also shows the bad parts of you, the stuff you don't want to see, the hidden parts. Remember that those four quadrants? He shows you some of those things. So it is really, really cool to take this. And has anybody taken this already? It was on Facebook and social media and stuff. Awesome. A lot of you have. Good. If you have not, that's okay. There is a link right here. If you want to pull out your phones and take a picture of it, you can right now. It will blow your mind about what it says about who you are and what number you find yourself. If you want to take this when you get home, you can. If you follow us on the blast, it'll be in the blast. If you want to do a handwritten one, and you're not a technology person, there are handwritten ones out on the wall out there about the Enneagram. You should probably, and you can look at the board, it looks awesome. If you know your number already, I'm going to invite you after the service to go out, and on it has these all the numbers, and in the little pocket has a little handout that you can take. Take your number, and it has the good things about you, the bad things about you, your childhood fear, and it might help you see those four pains a little clearer, as long as you're not defensive about it. And that is the hard part. That is the hard part. So the beauty of this Enneagram, there's all the numbers, and you're placed into a number. And you also have a wing. So I am a 2. And a wing is that not every 2 is the same. You might veer more like a 1, or you might veer more like a 3. And you have these different wings. It's kind of like if you go to like Home Depot or Lowe's, and you buy like you want to look for a paint can that's brown. There are millions of colors of brown. There are taupe, there's desert, there's cream. Every different type of 2 is a different type of 2. And it's beautiful because all of us aren't going to be just 9 numbers. We're all created uniquely, but we all have wings. So I'm a 2-wing 3. And what is also beautiful about this is these lines. So if I figure out my own self-awareness and I know more and more about myself, I will act in the growth category, or I'm acting in security. So I take the best of number 4, which is creative. I want to try things new. That's when I'm acting in high self-awareness. Now, the other flip side is this other line. When I'm acting in low self-awareness and I'm acting in stress, I take the worst of an 8. I am a micromanager, I over-organize, and that is me. And I can recognize going through this that sometimes I act like an 8. If you work in the church, I'm sorry. That means I'm just stressed out. And it helps you realize the things that you don't want to realize about yourself. And all of them have these different things. So you can look it up, and when you take the test, it'll tell you these different things. But there's one more beauty of it. There are different vices and virtues for each number. Our greatest strength as a in your number is your greatest virtue. So I'll pick mine as the 2. My greatest virtue is humility. I want to help others. I want people to be cared for. I really can feel with other people. Yet they're intricately designed. They're intricately linked together, my vice and my virtue. Because I want to care so much about people, I want to be affirmed that they know that I'm caring for them. And my vice is pride. I struggle with pride, and I still struggle with pride. This test makes you become aware of your greatest strengths and your greatest weaknesses, your greatest virtues and your greatest vices, if you're willing to not be defensive about it. When I first encountered the Enneagram, it was when I was a chaplain at a hospital in Tampa, Tampa General Hospital. And when you're a chaplain there, you really have to sit with people in their deepest, darkest moments. And you have to figure out how you're feeling, because people in that moment are feeling shocked. They're full of grief. They're full of loss. They're full of confusion. Sometimes they're full of joy because their baby's being born. They feel all of these different emotions, and you're walking into room, into room, into room. And one of my goals, and what you do as a chaplain, is to recognize yourself and to look deep into yourself about how you're feeling. So I was kind of learning about my feelings, and we took this Enneagram test, and there were 4 other chaplains that were in my group with me. And we took the test, and I found out that I was a 2. I was a helper. Now, I know you can't read this, but the left side of it, and these are all in the passouts out there, it says what I do at my best, and then what I do at my worst. So the first couple pages talked about what I did at my best. And I read it, and I said, okay, I'm loving, I'm compassionate, I'm adaptable, I'm nurturing, I'm generous, I'm supportive, I'm feeling really good about myself. The pride's coming up. I'm supportive, I'm hospitable, and I'm tuned into how people feel. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. But then I kept reading. I shouldn't have kept reading. But then it said where I'm at my worst. And it says that I'm intrusive, I'm martyr-like, I'm indirect, I'm manipulative, I'm possessive, I need flattery, I'm needy, and I'm overly accommodating. And I said, nah, that's not me at all. That's not me at all. In my group, we would meet, we would talk, and they would ask me the questions of, well, why do you do this? Or what's the purpose behind this? Or why did you help that person? Or why did you stay in this room for 5 hours when it could have just been 20 minutes? Did you want to be the superhero? I said, no, that's not me. And I didn't really want to listen to them. But then an event happened in my life. I had to work Tuesday night, the overnight shift, from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. And when you're working the overnight shift, you get calls all of the time of just terrible things that are happening, and it's draining. And I keep getting phone call and phone call, and about 12 o'clock, I get a phone call on my personal phone. from my mom. And my mother calls me and says, Will, I need you here right now. She's sobbing. I said, why? She's like, me and your stepdad are having a fight, and I need you to be here right now. Well, if I take a step back of where I'm at now, I think about my childhood, and I was always a helper. I fixed my sister's breakfast in the morning. I would put her shoes on. I would make sure everybody's ready to go in the house, and I would make sure that I was the rock of the family. I wasn't allowed to show my emotions. I was the helper. So I step back into this role. Of course, Mom. Yeah, I'll come over tomorrow, and we'll take care of it. 8 a.m. comes around. I'm exhausted. And I have to work the next overnight shift, 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. on Wednesday. So normally I would be sleeping throughout the day. But my mom called and says that she needed help. What do? I go and I help her. I go and it's from Tampa to Orlando, and I go and I sit down, I have a conversation with my stepdad, have a conversation with my mom. We come together, I tell my mom, go over there because you're not acting right. I tell my stepdad, go over there, you're not acting right. And 4 or 5 hours go in, and we end up reconciling everything. We go out to dinner, and it's about 6 o'clock. Well, I have to get back to my job, and I had not had any sleep. So I rush back to Tampa, I put all my clothes on, and I try to go back to the hospital. I am beat. And what happens? I get a lot more phone calls, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. And by 8 a.m., I am beat, I am tired, I could not care for my patients anymore, I was barely staying alive. I needed to go in the hospital. I was exhausted. So I went home that next day, and I passed out. And then Thursday rolls around, and I meet with my group. And I just vent. I explode. I'm like, I can't believe I had to do this. I can't believe that I had to care for my mom. I can't believe that they don't care about me. They're not appreciative of me. I can't believe that I had to do this. And I am just exhausted and tired. And what did they tell me? Will, do you remember that Enneagram we did? The helper of you? I'm like, oh, that's what they meant. Knowing things about yourself is so helpful for you to work out your own salvation. For us to figure out who we are is one of the primary things you can do for yourself, for your family, for your friends, for your loved ones, for your work. If you don't know who you are, you will be lost because you will be so blind you will forget about your bad things because everybody has them. I still struggle with overhelping and learning to say no. I still struggle with my pride because I want everybody to appreciate me for helping them. This is confession time. That's something that I struggle with, and it's a darkness that sometimes I need to be more aware of. We all have something. Yet now, 3 years later, I'm learning to say no to my family. I am not my mom's husband. I am not my mom's father. I am not the one that should be in the middle of that. You guys deal with your own stuff. I have to learn to say no to other people. I have to think about why I want to help this individual or that individual. Am I trying to be the superpower and puff up my pride? Or is it out of the genuineness of my heart? The question becomes, who are you? Because when you look in a mirror, so often we have masks on because we want to say we're the best thing in the world. But what the Enneagram does, it forces you to take the mask off and see the brokenness, see the struggles, see the stuff that you're not so good at. And it lets you see in the mirror this side and the shadow side of yourself. So my question for you is, who are you? All of you. As we close, I thought it'd be appropriate to pray this prayer together because it really touched me, and it was in a book that I was reading about the Enneagram, and it really helped me see the diversity and the beauty of this. So I'm going to ask that we all pray this prayer together. All right? Let's pray. God, might you